This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Life Enhancement Medicine Hour, leading you down the road to optimal living with Dr. Kevin Wallace and Dr. Zahara Sundermeyer. The doctors will focus on the foundations of health and newfound therapies you may not even know existed. Come join us on the path to your optimal life. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Kevin and Dr. Zahara.
Good morning, hello, everybody. How's everyone doing in our lovely shelter in place? Mm-hmm. Kevin is, or Dr. Wallace, I should say, is going crazy.
I'm slowly going crazy.
But I'm sure he's not the only one out there that is having a hard time being indoors and, you know, not allowed to go out and have a drink or have a... have some nice dinner at a restaurant. So
yeah, people watch. You know, it's like we're social beings. We're expert people watchers. That is an essential because it allows us as physicians to gain insight into people's, you know, character, I guess.
This is true. This is
Anyways, I did go for a great hike over the weekend.
You did.
Here in town, up the Pima Canyon with Dr. Brooks at On the Go Chiropractic, which or I am affiliating with, so
this is true.
It was fantastic. It was a great hike. So pretty much 15 minutes away from here, 15 minutes in the desert wilderness. So it was fantastic to get out, get some exercise. And then we did some lovely basketball training with coaches from the U of A at Dr. Brooks's place. So it was cool.
Well, that's nice.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I shot my bow and arrow at my mother's house while I was sheltering in place on their land. And so that was fun. I reminded myself not to smack my forearm with the bow.
I heard that there's like a special piece that you have to have in your forearm, or otherwise your forearms get chewed up.
Technically, you're not supposed to need it though. If you're good enough and you understand proper form, you don't need the covering of your forearm. Technically, you're supposed to be able to bend your elbow just enough. It's people that straighten it right up and it just smacks it. And I will be honest, when I was 9, I did it a couple times and my dad bought me a cover. And since then, I've gotten better. I only hit myself once just slightly because I have no idea where that cover went. But it's also been, you know, almost 20 years.
I know. Well, I will probably need the big strap of leather on my forearm since I've never done it. So, but I'm looking forward to in that regards. So
that's
hang out, shows. What is it? Hunger Games. We're getting ready for Hunger Games.
I'm just trying to be like Legolas in Lord of the Rings. That's where I'm at right now. I don't know how quick I'm going to need to get with my arrows and quivers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to need to buy a quiver
cow
at some point. I'm
thinking that was CGI. But if he was that good, that'd be amazing.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, and we are, I'm Dr. Sundermeyer, and down below is Dr. Wallace.
Yep.
And this is Life Enhancement Medicine Hour. We are coming to you live from Tucson, Arizona, where the day is actually kind of perfect and they're forcing us indoors. So we'll stay strong, I think is a good way to say it. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, we do have projects we can do outside.
It's true. So, we have a bunch going on outside. Today we're here to talk about GI function and its relation to optimal health. So of course, GI meaning our gastrointestinal tract or our digestive system. As always, we are here with the Life Enhancement Medicine doing telemedicine on I think we've been pretty consistent all week with both of the facilities we work with, Infusion Health obviously is consistently doing telemedicine for people all over the US, but we've also implemented it in our other clinics so that we don't have to have everyone, you know, have a lapse in their medicines and lapse in their treatments. So it's actually been working out quite beautifully. Minus some bogging down in the internet, I think, since everybody is now using it, which is lovely.
Yeah. Well, exactly. It's like, you know, I'm not a big fan of 5G, but man, let's just get the 4G going optimally.
Yeah.
So, you know, telemedicine. So we are excited because telemedicine, and obviously a lot of the practitioners that other people follow, Dr. Anderson, Dr. Gio Espinoza, all these people are doing telemedicine. And so we're obviously right in that mix. And so I think it's with this lovely crisis that's happening, it's going to be the wave of the future. We don't need crisis medicine. We, you know, you still have urgent cares and you still have ERs for all the emergent medicine in regards to crisis, but you no longer need to see a physician face to face. And so I think we're ahead of the curve just because we've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, we've been doing it since 2017 pretty nicely. We implemented it after we closed a clinic in California. And, you know, I think initially our patients had some issues, but, you know, I see people at work now all the time, and I think they love it because we don't have to have those really late appointments, or they don't have to leave work. We just take 30 minutes out of their day while they're on a break, and they sit in their office and we chat. Obviously, it's a little bit more in depth than that, but it works pretty beautifully. You can also follow us at Infusion Health Telemed on Facebook or on Instagram at infusion_health. And of course, this is Life Enhancement Med and Medicine on Facebook as well. So we're super excited for today's talk because I think the digestive system is completely underrated. And I think more and more people are writing books about it, and more people are talking about why it's so important for it to be healthy. But you know, I don't think people are quite grasping the intricate details of each system. And so that's kind of what today's talk is about. And we might take a little longer. We might not be able to get through it all, but we'll see. Because I think Dr. Wallace and myself have a lot of cool little tidbits about each section of the digestive tract.
So the cool thing is, like, if we have to continue it, guess what? There's the next hour. So if we get halfway through, we can sit there and say to be continued on our credits, like
TBC.
TBC. To be continued. Steven Spielberg. If we can do it real quick on this, if we know how to do it, so.
Now,
but Dr. Sennemeyer is cray.
I'm cray.
I said you're correct.
It's 8 a.m.
A famous was a Dr. Crinian, God bless his soul, one of our mentors in regards to medicine. When I took his GI course, he had a lady, an old physician that he learned from, and she stated that all disease begins and ends in the gut. I think it's from another famous naturopathic doctor. Yep. And so when we're looking at any kind of disease process, it's like we have to somewhat take care of the gut as well. Because if it is something else, it's like you have to have proper assimilation of possible supplements that we give you. You have to have breakdown of your food. So we'll get to things more in detail. But
absolutely.
Dr. Sennemeyer is about to say if you wanted to call the show.
Yeah. Did you want to complete it? Or I got you.
You got me.
All right. Well, a couple of things. As always, if you want to ask any questions, you're more than welcome to do so at Facebook at our Life Enhancement Medicine page. You can find the live feed going now and ask your questions. And after the show, Dr. Wallace or myself will go ahead and get back to you. Or you can call now at 844-390-8255. And we'll do our best to answer your questions as we move through our topic today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, what is the GI? I think is our biggest question, right? So we've already indicated that the GI stands for the gastrointestinal tract, but I think a lot of people are just solely involved today in the intestinal portion of our digestive tract. Although more and more people, I think, are getting involved with the stomach, right? Mm-hmm. But what's important, I think, to know in this section is that our mouth is hugely important when it comes to the beginning of our digestive system. I think so many people today are in the middle of doing something at work that they have taken for granted the importance of our mouth when it comes to digestion. Chewing and saliva and that combination with food is actually our preparing mechanism for what's happening in the stomach. And if you take less advantage of this area. We actually tend to have a lot more gas, a lot more bloating. I think even you, Dr. Wallace, have talked about patients where you've just encouraged them to chew their food a little bit better and their gas and bloating has decreased. And, you know, I think what we don't realize, especially when it comes to, you know, proteins, but also fibrous vegetables, is that this is the time in which you really have the best opportunity to break those really big substances down into really teeny tiny boluses of food, or kind of mush really is a goal. But most people make maybe, you know, one or two chews and then they swallow, and you're still putting quite large material down into the stomach, which increases the stomach's need for function. And of course, some people don't have the availability to produce the hydrochloric acid necessary anymore. So obviously we talked about chewing, right? This is all of our lovely teeth, that whole mechanical digestion that we have. But then of course there's two enzymes that are actually produced in the saliva of our mouth, which is amylase, breaking down carbohydrates, and lipase, which assists in the breakdown of fats into fatty acids. So you've already begun in this little area. And of course, everyone is so into chowing down, I think is a good way to say it, right? That we forget how important it is to sit and breathe and put our fork back down or put our sandwich back on the plate and chew what is actually in our mouth. And I, you know, I know I'm for one guilty for it on a really busy day, and I'm sure you are too. But I think if we step back a little bit, we could take some advantage of just this really important beginning area of digestion.
Yeah. So it's, it all debates in how we can basically chew and digest or assimilate our food. So if we can break it down further in the mouth. So they had an interesting study read in school in concentration camps, where they had people survived and obviously people that did not. And so they had this group, I do believe, of two or three gentlemen that even though they weren't getting solid food, they would chew. They would chew, even though it wasn't a solid food, or even if it was, and they found out they actually kept their body mass longer and obviously were able to survive. So they did studies in regards to what mechanism actually created that. And so like Dr. Sundermeyer said, it's not just a process of putting food into your mouth and thinking that the only thing that we're there for is to go ahead and chew. Insulin started, it helps preparing the gut for gastric juices. All these different hormones or whatever start to come out because it's thinking something's going to happen in the gut. And if we just swallow, we don't get that process going. And now your stomach is basically has to catch up and it goes, what the heck just happened to me? You right. skipped a step.
Well, and I think that with protein so much is such a huge importance. Why people have such a bad time digesting protein is because we take these monstrous bites and we just chew, scarf, and we just, you know, kind of inhale our food, for lack of a better word, these days. And so, I mean, we have to remember that this is so important when it comes to what's actually happening in our digestive system. So of course, part one, our mouths, right? Take advantage of these importance and make sure that, you know, you utilize this for all it's worth to give your stomach the best setup opportunity to continue the process of digestion.
Yeah. And it's free.
And it's free.
Supplement.
And it's free.
You know, it's one of those cases as a doctor, you try to give cheap stuff to people. It's like, just chew your food, sit down, you know, turn off, you know, CNN, Fox News, all this stuff that gives you stress because now you're in sympathetic dominance. You want to be in parasympathetic dominance and chew. And, you know, it's free, but people, if they actually start doing it and doing this on a regular basis, they realize it's like, wow, I will actually help out my GI. So obviously this bolus thing passes into the stomach, and the stomach will go ahead and do all of its processes in regards to churning, creating different chloric acid, and different, you know, conversion of different things like pepsinogen to pepsin, all these other things in the gut. And so again, if we don't have proper stomach care, or if we don't go ahead and chew properly, then this thing gets down into the gut and now you have a big boulder or anything like that that the body tries to break down and have fermentation, those types of things, and it's not as good as well. Plus, when we chew and we start to get the process going, we actually bake up or actually start the process of killing bacteria as well. So those are the right. things that are important.
Right. And of course, I think the biggest thing about this is that this, that our stomachs are actually meant to be an acidic environment. Like Dr. Wallace said, I mean, we make hydrochloric acid on purpose. And I always think about the Batman with Jack Nicholson when he fell into the vat, right, of acid and he got his face melted off, right? But that's actually what's supposed to happen in the stomach. You're supposed to eat Jack Nicholson and his face is supposed to get melted. But really, all of our proteins, all of our carbohydrates, everything is supposed to go from a broken down matter into more of a liquid matter, which is the key. I mean, that liquid is what's then supposed to take its place down into the small intestine for actual absorption. But the longer food sits there, the longer there's digestive irritation, the longer we have more indigestion, we're getting more reflux. But we're also getting these lovely things today that are acid blockers or PPIs, and that is completely affecting how food is digested today. So we're no longer allowing our broken down food from our mouth to become liquid. We're actually just leaving it into larger particles and it's passing into the small intestine. And that right there tends to be a big chunk of where indigestion is coming to play, malabsorption is coming into play, and of course the increased risk of B12 deficiency, but also osteoporosis, which I don't think a lot of people even consider is one of the things from taking acid blockers. So, you know, I mean, what better way to keep yourself set up is actually have a proper acidic environment.
Correct.
You know, and you've set yourself up for a lot of positive success if this stomach can have a pH of 2 to 3. And that's the thing I don't think people realize is that this is supposed to be a pH of 2 to 3. So you have all these doctors telling you, oh, well, you have acid reflux. And really, is it that you don't have enough acid because you keep taking all these things, or your digestive tract is so strained that you don't have enough production going on for the way you chew your food? I think a lot of things too that, you know, when we're in school, the things that people talk about is how do you prepare your digestive tract before you even eat? And a lot of it comes from the actual preparation of food, the smell of food. I think people don't take advantage of. So when you kind of are prepping and you're cooking your onions or you're getting your veggies sauteed or however you cook your food, that initiation of the smell of food is actually what prepares not only your mouth to start salivating, making more digestive enzymes, but also prepares your stomach to release those acids so that you're more and more ready for digestion. So there's this really cool steps and processes that actually take place, not to mention like sitting down. And don't be in the car driving while you're eating, or don't be in the middle of a meeting stressed out arguing with your coworkers or discussing intense topics with your coworkers while trying to eat, you know?
And so I think also, like Dr. Slenmar talked about hydrochloric acid, you know, when we see people and they go, they're on the PPIs because the doctor says I have, you know, hyperchlorohydria instead of hypo, that's very rare because our body has to pull a hydrogen ion, it has to pull a chloride ion, it has to combine it, and then it has to secrete it into the GI. And if your body doesn't want to get rid of a hydrogen or a chloride ion, it's not going to happen. So a lot of times it's just the health of the mucus barrier that's in your stomach. And those things can come from smoking and alcohol and improper food.
And caffeine.
And so when we go ahead, and so, you know, no one ever does, I think, the hydrochloric acid test, the Heidelberg test anymore, where they actually test your hydrochloric acid. So an easy thing to do is Google, it's like hypo or low stomach acid and diseases. And so there are obviously allergies and osteoporosis and psoriasis and all these other diseases come from low stomach acid. So when we see people and they say we're on PPIs because the doctor said, you know, this is that, or this is because I have too much stomach acid, it's like, yeah, it's pretty rare. And so we have to get them off of the PPI because technically you should only be on them for like 3 to 4 weeks. Long-term use of PPIs create, like I said, cardiovascular problems, all these other things because your body obviously needs calcium and all that. So now it goes from the stomach to the small intestine. And so this is where I learned from a fantastic doctor that if we don't have enough hydrochloric acid, and as that chime drips onto the small intestine, that's supposed to send a message to the gallbladder in that regards to release bile. And if we don't have enough acidity, the bile sits there and goes, well, we don't have to go ahead and squirt out as much And so it will actually reabsorb some of the sodium salts, those types of things, and now make the bile more sludgy. And so instead of having a squirt gun that's squirting out water, you have a squirt gun trying to squirt out Crisco. Okay, that usually stems from the inability to have a high stomach acid content dripping onto the small intestine and actually telling the bile now to sit there and go, all right, let's squirt on out, decrease some of the acidity, obviously help on out with some of the digestion in regards to the fat, to demulsify the fat. But so that's another consequence if we don't have enough stomach acid that now we possibly get a sluggish gallbladder, those types of things. And so we do want to make sure that we actually keep that process flowing perfectly.
Well, it makes you wonder how many people that are constantly popping Tums or popping something other, like, you know, the Zantac or the Pepcids, how many of them either have gallstones or have their had their gallbladders removed, and after what length of time, I think is an interesting thing to think, like, you know, how long after did they start needing antacids, and well, obviously why, but, you know, did something like that happen? Because I think there's a lot of people today that will start getting that right-sided, you know, liver pain after they eat, and they can't quite figure out why. And of course, then they get those lovely little gallbladder attacks, but, you know, they're not consuming either enough fiber to help balance out the bile, but also they're not, like you said, having enough acid.
Acid.
Yep.
I agree.
Well, now the small intestine, of course, I think is important to be aware of. It is commonly and approximately three times your height. So, you know, I'm 5'6". So my small intestine is easily over 10 feet or sorry, over 15 feet. I can do math. I promise. Yay, 8 a.m. But it's also segmented into three different areas. So the first part that Dr. Wallace is talking to you about, where bile is being released into the small intestine, is in your duodenum. This is where bile and your pancreatic enzymes come together for absorption and continued breakdown of your fats and carbohydrates and any other nutrients necessary, like protein. So if you don't have, and I think, like you said, so say for instance, we're not chewing our food, we don't have enough stomach acid, we're getting these large particles into our small, or into the entry of our small intestine, you know, how is that setting us up for malabsorption? That basically meaning we're not getting absorption of the nutrients from our food. And I know that the biggest issue today is that people don't think about food being what feeds us. So, you know, you don't think about the way what you're putting in your body affects the way you feel the next day. Putting it, you know, I tell patients all the time, you know, I did a food allergy panel. We saw that on my food allergy panel, I was a 3-star across the board on all dairy products. I removed dairy, put dairy back in, felt like I was hit by a bus just from a, you know, a tiny little yogurt container. And then of course you have people that tell you, oh, well, I don't feel very good, or I get itchy when I do dairy, or I get tired when I eat dairy, but I'm complaining of fatigue, but I still eat dairy 3 times a week. Like, there's reasons why you're getting these responses, and it's all a part of these different processes or the lack thereof certain enzymes like lactose, for instance, which a lot of us don't have, and it affects us down the road. And it actually affects us symptomatically. And that's, I think, a big portion is like what Dr. Wall is saying, you know, everything starts in the gut. I mean, this inflammation is second to our largest portion of our immune system being held in the digestive tract.
So, which I think most people don't understand. It's like your immune system begins in the mouth, like you said, in the stomach, in the gut, in regards to these things called Peyer's patches and the malt and the gall. Mucus-associated or mucus-associated lymphatic tissue and gut-associated lymphatic tissue. So these things hold all our immune systems, because when pathogens come in, obviously it has to deal with that, but it also gets taxed by undigested food. Right. So when we don't digest our food, and these food particles that are too big go into the small intestine for assimilation, and they're not, well, they become basically a pathogen, and the body has to utilize this white blood cell to go ahead and digest these things. And now you're taxing the immune system in that regards. And so now if you have a disease that comes in and you're always having a GI system that's always inflamed, because the immune system has to pick up, where's the priority? Is it going to attack the pathogen that just came into your system? Right. Or is it so tired because it obviously now is dealing with all the food? And like Dr. Sundermeyer mentioned, in regard to people and their food sensitivities, you know, they go, well, you know, I have a little piece of string cheese, or I have a little piece and I have that once a week. Well, that's still influencing at one time a week your system. As I always tell people, you can take a speck of salt, just one speck, put it on the table and you can see it, but we can't see the red blood cells or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So when we put that little tiny thing upon our tongue and we're sensitive to it, it's like a grenade going off in your system and it starts the histamine response and it just explodes. And if you're doing that once a week for 10 years, even though you're having dairy once a week, it's still going to perpetuate the system. So you have to get rid of it altogether.
With gluten and gluten intolerances, even they talk about the inflammatory phase of the presence of gluten. So you have a sandwich on Monday and 2 weeks later, some of the inflammation is still present in the system. And so, you know, I used to talk about how gluten really wasn't the bigger issue. It doesn't really come up on my food allergies, but I will tell you, it all is about where you're going to get your gluten from. I got gluten attacked in February at a seminar, and my brain just shut down. And it's interesting because it was within about 30 minutes of our meal. So I've eaten 30 minutes later, food's still in my digestive system, specifically probably still in my stomach. And my functionality was zero. I would say, you know, I hear that you guys are talking, I think is what I said, but I have no idea what you guys are saying. Like, my receptivity was done. And so, you know, you can imagine those people with those afternoon energy drops, how is that actually being impacted by the fact that they ate a sandwich? Because it happened to me within 30 minutes. So, you know, it's all about, is it the bread from, you know, a conventional store, or is it a healthy, organic, clean bread? And those always make a big difference for me. But I thought that it was quite interesting, you know, 30 minutes within the meal, like I was done. I was down for the count. And then I didn't feel good. My brain didn't work well the next day. You know, my body didn't feel good. I felt sluggish and heavy. So it's like, you know, you think to yourself, wow, I have so many of my patients that are talking to me about they feel sluggish all the time, or they feel, you know, like their brain isn't working all the time, or they live in a brain fog. And it's like, well, okay, so yes, let's work on your hormones, and yes, let's clean up these things, but how much of it is your actual digestive system just in an inflamed state all the time because of food choices? And that's the hardest thing to get through to people, is that food makes such a huge difference in how your immune system and how your body functions.
So you know, the small intestine has, like I said, that one purpose, that's for absorption. You know, obviously it has several others, but the majority of it is absorption. And so if it's inflamed, you know, these are where now you have those tight junctions, because food absorption goes through a process. It's not just, it just doesn't enter the bloodstream. And so you have these protein structures that are supposed to be broken down. They enter into the small intestine. They get absorbed proper channels. But now if you have inflammation, the cell basically starts to break down these lovely tight junctions and allows these proteins to enter directly into the bloodstream.
Right.
And now your body goes, ooh, holy cow, this is an invader. Even though it's like, well, it's food, it's a protein.
Right.
And so your body attacks it. And so I think it makes these lovely circulating complexes, immune complexes, that now if they start to go ahead and persist for a long period of time, you have such things as fibromyalgia, all these other different types of things, because that leaky gut component, circulating immune complexes, your body always has to attack it.
Right.
So, you know, that's why that's so important.
Well, and I think the thing that we didn't really discuss back in the stomach, which, you know, again, primes the digestive system in the small intestine, is people that have had a gastric bypass surgery and the effects of how removing a larger portion of the stomach or decreasing the size so that you don't have as large of a food intake. I mean, you might still be eating your exact same foods, but what do they tell you all the time? Well, you have to make sure that you take a calcium supplement all the time now. And you have to make sure that you take these nutrients all the time now. And you have to have small, frequent meals all the time now. But really, those people are my most fatigued patients, because they are not having, one, proper digestion breakdown in the stomach, right? And then, of course, majority of them have had a gallbladder removal, which is sometimes frustrating and sad, because now you're having decreased availability of breakdown of fat, but also absorption of fats, which are huge for cognition, huge for cell health, huge for skin health. So people complaining of dry skin all the time and, oh, it's my thyroid. And you're like, oh no, it's your thyroid's great, you know? But, you know, we're not thinking about the way our body absorbs.
Correct.
You know, and with leaky gut, I think we have to go back to the point is leaky gut presents in so many ways. Just like I say, I was hit by a bus. Like, I get what I think is fibromyalgia. My entire body hurts. My arms hurt. My muscles hurt. My joints hurt. My hands ache when I eat food that I know my body's not supposed to, like dairy. And that just gets me. So, and people think, oh, well, if I have a leaky gut, you know, you go back to the idea of it must just be gas and bloating and reflux or indigestion. And that is definitely something that people can think about. But what we also don't consider is acne. What we don't consider is anxiety. What we don't consider is, you know, arthritises or fibromyalgias, like you're saying. And so, you know, we really have to take a step back and go, you know, sometimes the best thing I can do is remove gluten. And I had a gentleman I was working with whose anxiety was getting so much better after we did a food allergy panel. And he was frustrated because I didn't do any additional fancy tests. And I was like, why do I need to do any additional fancy tests if you're telling me you're getting better? And of course, he decided that he was going to have some beers over a weekend. And his symptoms returned. And I was like, well, I feel like this is a really good way for us to realize that, yeah, this is a huge difference for you. And, you know, some people don't really, I think, poo-poo the importance of the way your digestive system is responding to food antigens and food proteins. Yeah. And, you know, you gotta take a step back sometimes and realize that a lot can be healed and you can feel so much better and your brain can work so much better if you just remove those poor foods or, you know, enhance your digestive system.
Correct. So another case example of that is like I had a patient that had heart palpitations, PACs. They couldn't find what was going on. I was like, you know, it's like I really think you have a histamine aspect going on. Obviously, the vagus nerve, histamine, those types of things. Vagus nerve innervates pretty much all your organs, obviously the stomach, intestines. So if they're kind of freaked on out, it's going to kick a reflex up the vagus nerve and affect the heart as well as the brain. So we didn't test him for histamine, but we just put him on some histamine-free or less histamine foods and then gave him some supplements to help on out with some of the histamine. And all those things went away. And this is after about 12 years of seeing specialists in regards to his heart. So it just shows you, like Dr. Sundermeyer said, these vague symptoms that it's like they can't find anything else. All you have to do is go ahead and like I said, meet two qualified physicians like we are, possibly get a food sensitivity test, and those things can help with some of the answers that you might have. So those are the things that we offer in regards to our lovely telemedicine services. So, all right. So after the small intestine comes what?
Well,
the large intestine.
Sort of, yeah. Well, I think the thing, again, going back to the jejunum, where we have more absorption of sugars, fatty acids, amino acids. This is all taking place in the small intestine. Again, this 15-foot section of our system. And the other thing I think is important is if you are having inflammation in these portions, you're having decreased absorption of these nutrients like amino acids. So people that are constantly feeling weak or their muscle integrity is low, you know, they're definitely not getting the nutrients necessary, plus the B12 that needs to be absorbed much lower down due to intrinsic factor, which is, of course, made by our stomach acid. So, you know, we might have enough intrinsic factor, but we might have an inflamed, you know, small intestine, and in turn, we're not getting our B12 absorbed, so now we're exhausted. So all the things that kind of go into it. Now, Dr. Wallace has this really cool image, and I think we're going to post it today, about the gut-brain axis. And this goes to where the brain itself is actually receiving data from the digestive system, basically, of nutrients so that it can help make neurotransmitters, basically. And it's talking about, and I think you kind of read this study a little bit more, so you're going to talk about this a little bit more, but it's really just receiving information about, do we have enough serotonin? Do we have enough neurotransmitters available? I think the thing that we think about is, oh, I'm depressed and it's my brain that's broken. It's like, no, 90% of your serotonin is produced in your digestive system. I think do you have anything else to add to that one?
Yeah, well, it's like we tell people the same thing. So every neurotransmitter that's pretty much made in your brain is made in your gut. So if you don't have the proper bacteria, flora, if feeding it appropriately, it will go ahead and deplete those neurotransmitters, but it will also influence back up to the vagus nerve into the brain and actually cause neural inflammation into the brain.
Right.
So that whole connection of the proper fertilizer in regards to the gut is like obviously creating the proper fertilizer for the brain. And right. So we have to work on both, like Dr. Steinmeier said, ADHD, bipolar, all these things can obviously have a genetic influence, but those things can definitely be influenced by the gut and the flora and the proper bacteria. So we learned recently in regards to the proper bacteria that we have hundreds of different species. And so sometimes when we're maybe trying to correct an acute aspect, we want to go ahead and like do a probiotic, but he was understanding long-term we don't, because now it really narrows down what your body actually produces. Like if you're just taking a probiotic that's 50 billion and it's only 10 strains, well then that pretty much becomes what your body now will have.
Right.
So we learned basically to help delay the fertilizer, eating your fiber,
right,
those types of things, possibly taking butyric acid, those types of things to actually try to rebuild your natural flora that has the wide range of obviously these different types of species. So
right.
It's kind of changed our theory in regards to treating people, and it's actually worked out quite well in regards to helping them on out.
Right.
And so it goes back to that proper digestion, assimilation, mm-hmm. eating fiber, which most people do not eat enough of, the proper types of fiber, taking a digestive enzyme possibly, and then letting your body just do what it needs to do, create its own bacteria in that regard. So
right. Yeah.
The importance of the gut-brain reaction in regards to tryptophan and into 5-HT, all these other things that convert into serotonin is extremely important. And so that's why we need to work upon your gut. And obviously it's like if people, you know, in our audience, excuse me, an easy thing to do is just put in gut-brain access and then put in PubMed.
Right.
After that, and you can just see tons of studies in regards to this newer, somewhat form of medicine that's been around for a while, but now I think people are finally starting to take it serious.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. Now, there's this great, so we went to a conference a couple years ago, myself and Dr. Wallace, where we listened to a Dr. Zach Bush talk, and he had some really cool articles, and this is going to be one that I'm posting today, but really it talked about how the endocrine cells that are found in the stomach, the intestine, the pancreas produce 50% of our dopamine, 90% of our serotonin. And of course, the production of these neurotransmitters is reliant on beneficial bacteria, and that's what this study indicated. So it's a cool study that's that came out in 2015. So again, pretty relevant. Indigenous bacteria from the gut microbiota regulate host serotonin biosynthesis. And of course, so again, it's not always that your brain is not releasing serotonin. It's that your digestive tract and the beneficial bacteria are not producing serotonin. And that's the thing that I think that we have to take a step back from too, which I always remind myself when I read these studies is like, it's not all about our intracellular function that makes these nutrients like serotonin. It's actually also about the way the bacteria digest things and then make the byproduct. That's the other thing, like even vitamin K. So that's the new thing, right? Everyone wants vitamin K2 because it's the more bioavailable form and it's the active form. But it's like, well, if you eat your plant matter and you have healthy bacteria, right? Your K1 should naturally convert into K2 in your gut. And so the importance of this microflora, and of course everyone, you know, has been on a 5-strain or a 9-strain or a 12-strain probiotic, but you know, at what point are we going to get to the place where we go, wow, maybe we just need better prebiotics to have better balance of our flora, mm-hmm. so that they can actually flourish but also be strong enough to fight off pathogens that get through our stomach. And that's the thing that we don't think about. Now, of course, the other thing that we have to remind ourselves is excess use of antibiotics over time. You know, all of our kids that have been on amoxicillins and penicillins and azithromycins due to tonsillitis and strep throats and ear infections repetitively when they were younger, when their immune systems were so immature and, of course, right, in development, how did that affect the way their natural bacteria grew? And do they now have a higher risk of asthma? Do they now have a higher risk of allergies or attention deficit disorder or mood dysregulation, like anxiety or depression? So there's so many possibilities when you're thinking about the long-term effects of these components, which, you know, I think what people were saying for a while, we were handing out penicillin like candy. And you're like, oh, and you know, I think a lot of it is parents want support and want to feel supported. And so when they go to the doctors and their kids are complaining of ear pain, but they don't really have an ear infection, they still get an antibiotic. So even if it was going to get, they were going to get better in 3 days with it or 3 days without it, they now have it. So they feel that benefit of it. And so that's where I always liked, you know, the nutrients that we were able to give to support these types of things.
Yeah. And natural, like I said, eardrops. And like I said, a lot, obviously, of ear infections come from a viral component. So,
correct.
So those are things that, but like you said, I think before the age of two, if you introduce an antibiotic, that pretty much it destroys their natural flora and they have to restart. And yep, obviously they can't go through the birth canal, which mm-hmm, they're getting all the flora from their mom.
Right.
And so they have to be re-inoculated. And if they're not, you know, for some reason, you know, the bad overrides the good. It's like good, like, you know, the Darth Vader and, you know, and all that stuff. It's like they find,
you're so good at that analogy.
I know.
That was great.
Well, it's like, it's one of those things. It's like the bad, it's like every time you have something, the bad, like I said, grows faster than the good. So when you're,
oh man, theory of entropy.
Before you're the age of two, yeah.
It's like the one thing I took from physics is the entropy. My room will always be a mess. Mm-hmm. I will always be bad at putting my dirty clothes in the laundry basket. Right.
It's
the dishes will always pile up if you don't do them.
So we're in the process of moving into our new house. And so obviously all the dishes go away, but it's kind of nice. It's like we'll have one dish, one cup, one fork, or, you know, two forks, two spoons. It'll be like a piece of cake. It'll be like, man, this is awesome.
We don't need to unpack ever. We have the cleanest house ever.
We are true minimalists. If guests that come on over, sorry. You're just going to have to eat on the clean kitchen table, I guess.
Now, more and more studies are being done on the way glyphosates are affecting the breakdown of our tight junctions, which are, of course, also increasing leaky gut. So there's some new studies that are coming out that are discussing how exposure to glyphosate exposure to our intestinal cells and how it creates an inflammatory response, basically increasing the distance between your digestive system, basically the cells of the digestive system. So if my palms mm-hmm. together, and I know everyone's not going to see this, but we'll do our best. My palms are touching together, right? I have an awesome tight junction. Nothing can get through here. But now I have glyphosate entry and slowly these cells can no longer hold on to the tight junction. So it's actually breaking down. And there's multiple steps that go into this, you know, breakdown of the zonulin molecule, which is mm-hmm. what is holding together those cells. And of course, this is then affecting this. Now, glyphosates are commonly found on wheat and gluten-containing grains. And of course, if you think about it, when was the last time you looked at something that had gluten in it? And you don't think about it because it says things like dextrin or cornstarch or things like that. But there's so many things that are gluten-containing and the way they affect our tight junctions. And this is where, again, this inflammatory phase takes place. How long does it take for those tight junctions to reestablish normalcy? Is it 1 day? Is it 3 days? Or is it 3 weeks, right? And so when you say, oh, well, I only do it twice a week, I only have a little bit of gluten, or I only have a little bit of dairy. But when they're exposed to pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and we pretend, I suppose is a good way to think about it, that they don't affect our own systems, I think that is where we're realizing that there's also a higher prevalence of not only bacterial imbalances, but also the leaky gut concept.
Correct.
Right.
And so, correct. And glyphosate now, like, you know, we like to drink a nice good bottle of wine. And so people don't understand that, unfortunately, all the wines in California pretty much tested for glyphosate. So
yep. Even organic wines, just correct. Because wind.
In the soil. Well, wind and it's in the soil. So mm-hmm. if you have a farm or a grape farm that you pull out, mm-hmm. and you want to go ahead and now put in, you know, organic grapes, and you never spray pesticides on them again, and glyphosate is obviously in the soil. So you'd have mm-hmm. to basically replace about 3 feet of soil, replace it, or basically inoculate it with a bunch of probiotics, which I think Dr. Zach Bush is actually a big, huge proponent of. And he's trying to do this with organic farming and trying right. to bring that back on in, where it's like, all right, you have to remove it, re-inoculate mm-hmm. it with bacteria. These types right. of things help grow.
Well, I know that when we were in med school, Dr. Crinian once said that if you want to create better balance in your your yard or in your garden, you should plant a bunch of squash. And the unfortunate thing is you should then use these squash and throw them away.
Throw them away because they suck up everything.
They suck up everything. So yeah. if you feel like, wow, the people that lived in this house before me had these awesome, garden here, but, you know, did they spray, you know, with whatever, you know, herbicide was there that was right. glyphosate containing or whatever else containing. Because of course the combination ones, you know, like the one that starts with an R, those ones are actually a lot more invasive than even just glyphosate alone. So, mm-hmm. you know, are you using something on your weeds in your garden or on your aphids? How is that affecting the way, you know, the soil has been treated? Because that's going to run down into the soil and then get absorbed into the soil, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, all right. So now we got the small intestine.
So I think we did it.
That was good. Right? Well, I wanted to talk about obviously this new one called SIBO, or it's never called SIBO, but it's SI. So SIBO to me seems SEBO.
I think that's the joys of the American language. Where so in any other language it would probably be SIBO, SEBO, mm-hmm. but the thing is that it's small intestinal bacterial yeah. overgrowth, not small enterocyte.
I know, exactly. Bacterial overgrowth. Well, that's a good one. I like it. So we have this division between.
It's almost nine, so I'm almost awake. That's where we're coming here.
So we have a division between the small and the large, the thing called the ileocecal valve. And this mm-hmm. obviously is supposed to be a valve that doesn't allow backup from the large intestine into the small intestine. Because as the small intestine is for absorption, mm-hmm. the large intestine is pretty much for fermentation, absorption of other materials, water especially. Mm-hmm. But if you have a very dysfunctional ileocecal valve, well, it allows those little creepy critters from fermentation to build back up into the small intestine. And now you have small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Mm. So the concept obviously of this is like, well, how can we go ahead and take care of proper digestion, those types of things, to go ahead and help on out and create obviously an ileocecal valve that is appropriately functioning and tight to not allow, like I said, that matter to come back into the small intestine.
Right.
So in regards of treatment, you know, everybody probably has heard the treatments, they've read the books, but it boils down to the basics of what we're talking about: diet, digestion, assimilation, proper stomach acid, those types of things. And you can actually do homeopathics that will strengthen up the ileocecal valve. And there's mm-hmm. also different soft tissue maneuvers that I learned a long time ago in regards to doing soft tissue work and myofascial work that actually helps release the ileocecal valve. So meeting someone that might go ahead and be able to go ahead and unstick it, learning different visceral massage techniques, or seeing someone that can help you on out in that matter as well. Because it doesn't have to be as complicated, I think, as sometimes people think. It's like if we right. just do the basics.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, we have to also outweigh the difference. Now, SIBO has become a very huge catchphrase. There's a lot of people that have caught on to it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're definitely helping a lot of people, but there's also this really intense antibiotic that goes along with the SIBO treatment called rifaximin. And ultimately the question is what action is that antibiotic doing? And it's still an antibiotic. So again, there's no differentiation when you're taking antibiotics when it comes to beneficial or negative bacteria, right? Mm-hmm. Pathogenic bacteria. There's no differentiation. They either do one thing, another thing, or another thing. They break down the wall. They decrease replication. They do something. So they're always going to affect the way the system works. I've recently been working with this young lady who was diagnosed by another naturopathic physician with SIBO. Joys are, she got put on rifaximin. Within 2 weeks, she started getting anxiety big times, feeling really overwhelmed, feeling easily stressed. This is a straight A student. She's 15 now, I think. So of course, you know, big intestinal things. So when you're doing these types of treatments, the other thing is how do you support the digestive system in the midst of this? We did two small things to add to her regimen for this SIBO treatment. And within a week, her anxiety went away and it never amplified again. But had we not stopped while she was in the middle of this rifaximin, how would she have, you know, been 3 weeks later?
Correct.
Or after her 3 months of antibiotics, you know? And that's the other thing, you know, people don't consider this after an H. pylori antibiotic regimen either, is, mm-hmm. Oh, I was fine. And then I had H. pylori, and then I had the triple, you know, medication treatment for that. And then, you know, 6 months later, I'm on meds for anxiety. But I've never had anxiety before. So ultimately the question is can you step back and find that point where the antibiotic came into play or the illness came into play, and all of a sudden your mood is now in dysregulation?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, we learned Dr. Anderson, which obviously is on these podcasts. So there are some fantastic ways to treat SIBO, which again, when we're not discrediting or anything like that. But I think if you're just going to someone that treats SIBO and only, they have to look at the totality of everything and support the systems appropriately. And so finding someone that knows how to do those things are fantastic, because if they're just treating that and you have other genetic, you know, things going on, there's other things hormonally wise, deficiencies, those types of things. It's like just making sure that you see someone that knows how to treat it as a well-rounded and not just one simple, simple aspect that you went ahead and did a breath test, you tested positive. Mm-hmm. And so you now have SIBO, you've been diagnosed with it, but that could be because improper chewing, improper digestion, improper hydrochloric acid, right. Improper assimilation. So mm-hmm. Getting those things, like I said, addressed as well is very important.
Right.
Now, all right.
I think, let's see. Oh, we are here on 15.
All right.
Gluten sensitivity. So we talked a little bit about gluten sensitivity and exposure,
Before we get that, uh-huh. So we're probably going to continue this one. we're not going to finish it. So we'll talk
four
about
minutes left. We're not going to finish.
We're going to go ahead and follow it on up with finishing up with the GI, and then some things you can actually do to improve your GI as well. So we'll turn it into a whole process. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Perfect. Well, I think then at this point in time, the things that we need to know is obviously digestive systems that can be affected by, or systems that can be affected by gluten. And we're going back to the gluten concept. And really, I think it's important that, you know, the way gluten affects things like Hashimoto's and can actually worsen the thyroid peroxidase antibodies due to the way gluten can mimic the thyroid peroxidase molecule. And so, you know, these are things that can worsen Hashimoto's, which is why when you go gluten-free, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes the treatments that you get aren't always the most intricate treatments that you think that you should be receiving. And I mean, you could be handed a kitchen sink, you could be handed 6 tests, but really in the big picture, you should just remove, you know, the treatment, you know, the basics. Mm-hmm. And yep. There are things that I do a ton with people that we do food challenges. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. I mean, when was the last time you just did a 4-week food challenge? Give your digestive system 2 weeks to clean up, 2 weeks to heal, see how you feel, and then see what happens when you introduce it. Yep. Do you get that severe fatigue? Do you get weakness? Do you get abdominal pain? Do you feel more depressed? Did your brain stop working, or you're feeling like, wow, I was feeling really clear and crisp, but now my brain isn't as on point with things. I'm not as witty as I once was. I'm not on top of my game at work, or even little things like headaches. You know, these are the things that I think we take for granted. Oh, I was in front of a computer. No, you've been in front of a computer every day for work forever.
But donut.
You ate the donut. I know. So Whole Foods makes these amazing vegan donuts that, you know, Dr. Wallace and my mother love to eat. And of course, the joys of vegan doesn't mean it's gluten-free. So I don't get to partake in the vegan donut, even though they're dairy-free. So I just get to look and scowl.
But like she was saying, it's like making sure that you remove these things, see how well you feel, because that's a good positive feedback. So obviously I think as being physicians, the one thing we want to do is create a positive change. And as people feel that positive change, they're more inclined now to stay with the program. Right. So if you start to feel better,
right,
to know these things are working, you have to stick with it. And so sometimes it takes 6 months, sometimes it takes a year.
But right.
Right now, I think our health is important, especially with the crisis going on right now. We want to have a healthy system to fight off whatever we're confronted with. And that begins and ends in the gut.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that that's like a beautiful stopping place right now, because then we can finish up on different treatments for the digestive system at our next show. And then we can also talk about preconception care, because that was actually the goal, but we'll see how much we get into it at our next topic.
We'll zip through it because that will be a great lead into preconception care, because it begins in the gut. So we can talk about
all gut treatment.
And then Dr. Sundermeyer is fantastic in regards to preconception and infertility and fertility. So check out the next podcast. It was a great one today. Go out, get some sun, some exercise.
We hope you all enjoyed our overview of the gut. Yeah, get your vitamin D. Again, get out there till you pink. You can definitely follow us on Instagram at @infusion_health. You can rewatch this podcast on our Life Enhancement Medicine page, and you can watch us live or you can listen to it on there as well. We hope that everybody is having a fantastic week so far, and you know, do something for yourself this week, even though you're either working or stuck at home. Stop cleaning your closet. Maybe go outside, plant a plant, collect some seeds from the squash you just bought. Don't let your significant others throw them away.
Yes.
And we all hope that you guys have a wonderful rest of your week. We'll see you here next week at 8 a.m. on Wednesday for the remainder of our GI talk, but also, again, the beginning of our preconception care.
All right, everybody.
A wonderful one. I'm Dr. Sundermeyer.
And I am Dr. Wallace, and we are
Infusion Health.
Infusion Health.
Bye, everyone. You've been listening to the Life Enhancement Medicine Hour with Dr. Wallace and Dr. Sundermeyer, bringing the power of health to your listening ears. You can learn more by visiting infusionhealth.org. That's infusionhealth.org. Follow them on social media and join the movement to better health.
Hello, heavy lifters, renters, and buyers. Welcome to your local cat dealer, Empire. Home to offers like 0% for 60 months, plus 90 days, no payments and no interest on new Cat compact equipment. Call 480-781-0373. Terms and conditions apply.
Indian gaming casinos are doing wonders for our tribal communities. But with all the good comes a hidden danger, problem gambling. But there is help. The Arizona Division of Problem Gambling offers resources and counseling to help people understand and manage their gambling problem and start taking steps forward in their recovery. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT STEP to 53342 and start solving your problem gambling.